This is Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu, and this is the Networking Basics mini-series, Part 8. In this episode, we're going to set up a web server, and we're going to do it internally, because already we've set up a gateway server. We've got the internet going into that and going out to all of our clients on the network. We've got set up a DHCP server to actually give IP addresses to all of those clients so that they can get to each other and get out to the internet, and stuff that they've asked for on the internet can get back to them. And then the episode after that, which was this past episode, most immediate past episode in the series, we set up a DNS server with the fine Mara DNS server, DNS server software, and we also mentioned DNS mask with a Q, which apparently is sort of an easier version of all that, that uses the /etc/host file to sort of emulate DNS server etude and resolve domain names to IP addresses and so on. So in this episode, we're going to just dive right into web server installation, which honestly, after at this point, it's just going to be really simple. You're not even going to know what to do with yourself because it's basically practically one step. But of course, we'll make it a little bit more interesting just because we can. But the typical web server install is, you know, something like yum install Apache or something like that. That's pretty much it. Apt-get install Apache 2. And then literally, quite literally, if you go to one of your client machines that you've got set up and you type in the address of that server, which since we have internal DNS running, we can just do slackermedia.local, and suddenly you'll see the old "it works" greeting. So on Debian, it's a "it works" page, and it's white with black text, and it says it works. On Fedora, you get a fancy "it really works" page with lots of text and like explanatory, like, here's why you're seeing this page. Don't panic, this is normal, you know, and you got the little Apache logo. So it's that simple. It's just, it's done. It works. Where to find it? Almost invariably, you will find the the folder that contains the stuff that people see when they go in onto your website, which of course really is just a folder on your computer, right? Well, it's not in your home directory by default. It's in /var, because you don't want people in your home directory, /www. And if you look around in there, by default, at least on my Red Hat install, there's a cgi-bin, there's an error folder, there's an HTML folder, and then there's an icons folder. I got no clue what's in the icons folder. But if we go into the HTML folder, of course, we'll see the default stuff in there, which right now is nothing. In fact, I believe that it gets forwarded by default to /usr/share/local/share/httpd, I think, something like that. And the point being that twofold, that until you put stuff into that HTML folder, all you're going to see is a "it works" thing, but that is where you want to put stuff, /var/www/HTML. And the other thing is that the generic name of the Apache or the web server daemon is httpd. So on Red Hat, you don't service Apache 2 start, you service httpd start. And that starts your web server. Now you can go to your website on a browser. I guess I kind of skipped over that step. On Debian, it would be /etc/init.d/apache2start. So it's not called httpd. The name of the daemon is Apache 2 on Debian. And the users that Apache runs as are different on Red Hat systems versus Debian. I think on Debian it's like www-data or something, whereas on Red Hat it's Apache, I think. So that's usually, again, quite honestly, that's about all there is. On Slackware, it's /etc/rc.d/rc.httpd start. and that starts the HTTP server. There's not a whole lot more to it. If you've ever been on a website and you know how to make stuff appear, then you're ready to go. You just cd into /var/www/html and you can start making all the files that you want. Now, realistically, you might want to assign like a specific user to be your web dev user so that all the stuff in there is being kind of managed by that one user. You might not. It really depends on how you want to do it. I made a group called the design group, and that's what all the web developers, all of them are members of that group. And so when they sign in, they all have permission to change all of this stuff in /var/www/html. That is also where you'd put pre-made things like Drupal, like a Drupal install, or a Wikimedia, or a Tiki Wiki site, whatever. You know, you dump it into your /var/www/html on Red Hat, and then when you go to slackermedia.local in your web browser, or 192.168.8.1, port 80, of course, then that's where you're going to see everything. Now, of course, you can do a lot more than just that. And one of the things that you can do is, since we have that DNS server going on, we can make different domains exist on the same box. And one of those places, or the place to do that, would be the /var folder. And in /var /www, you can make folders that are the different sites that you want to exist on the web server. Now, you can't just make the folders and have them be different sites. That's not quite how it works. So that is something that you have to set in the in the web server that you're running. And of course, it is important to note, since I nearly misspoke about it anyway, that you can have different web servers running. You can use a different web server. I'm using Apache because that's the big one that I heard about, and I just kind of figured, well, that's a good place to start. But there are some really cool alternatives out there, like Nginx and LightyPD, that you should check out, you know, and try running those, see if they're better or easier or faster, you know, whatever you want. Now, Apache is kind of nice because it's kind of one of those, everyone's going to support Apache, right? I mean, you're not going to find that you made a mistake by configuring Apache. You know, you're going to find pretty much that every pre-built site out there, like WordPress and Drupal and all the wikis and whatever you might want to install in this thing, they're going to have Apache support out of the box. So it's kind of the safe bet in that sense, but at the same time it is kind of, I guess, in a way, well, I don't want to say it's the easy way, but I mean it is the one that, it's the most obvious one. So the place that you'd want to configure where all the domains live and kind of what's called virtual hosting will actually differ from Debian to Red Hat. Shouldn't really surprise you, but it will. In Red Hat, it is in /etc/httpd/conf/http.conf. I just put them down at the bottom of the file because that's where their little demo or their sample text was, and the syntax is the same as Red Hat and Debian. Debian actually does this really nicely, and they split it up into sites that are enabled and sites that are actually, or sites that are available and sites that are actually enabled. It's really quite nice, actually. Read up a little bit on that if you want, because it's to me, that's kind of the way that I think maybe everyone should do it. It's really quite nice. But anyway, in the Red Hat config at /etc/httpd/httpd.conf, I think, there down at the bottom, there's a commented outline that says use name-based virtual hosting. And under that it says name virtual host space asterisk port 80. That simply says that that Apache is going to be aware, if you uncomment that line, that configuration line, that Apache is going to be aware that there are more than one site living on this box, and that they're virtual sites. They're virtual websites, because traditionally speaking, I guess a website was a server, but Apache came along and maybe displaced that notion with these virtual hosts. So the virtual hosts, it's pretty simple syntax for what I do. And obviously you can find more complex configurations online, but it's just virtual host, less than symbol, virtual host, camel case with a capital V and an H, space, asterisk, colon 80, greater than symbol, next line, server name, again, camel case with a capital S and N, space, www.slackermedia.local, next line, document root, camel case, capital D and capital R, space, slash, var, slash, www, slash, HTML, slash, www.publicsource.local. And then the next line, you close the virtual host. So it's a little bit, you know, XML-y. So you do a less than, slash, virtual host, camel case, greater than. And that closes that block. So you duplicate that block as many times as you want, pointing each server name to a different directory within your server. It's done the same way on Debian, it's just a different file. And then you can place the configurations for each of those websites in either site enabled or site available, and you can move that file from one to the other to turn the site on or off. It's really, really neat and quite effective. I've not really done anything too fancy on Red Hat so far in terms of having multiple sites on one main box, but it is something that Apache apparently, you know, does really well. So I don't know how other web servers handle that. I'm sure they do, I just don't know how, but that is how you do it. I don't know if we started the server yet. I think we did, right? So it would be service httpd start on Red Hat, or it would be /etc/init.d/apache2 start on Debian. And if you had just changed a setting, you would want to usually restart that service. You wouldn't want to restart your computer, obviously. You just do service httpd restart, or etc/init.d Apache 2 restart, and that will restart. A lot of times if you're restarting a service and it fails to restart, it means that you've done some typo in the configuration file that you've just changed, and you need to go back, and it's probably, you know, a misplaced greater than symbol or a forgotten semicolon or whatever. So some of the really common associated services that people find themselves installing with Apache, for instance, would be, for instance, MySQL Server. MySQL Server is a lot, in terms of simplicity and configuration and stuff, I equate it in my mind to SSH, because you simply install, you know, you do an apt-get install MySQL-server, and it grabs all the associated packages with a MySQL database installation that will then serve databases to various things, including your own Apache server. The reason I'm mentioning this, one reason is because it's hugely famous. I mean, the LAMP stack. It's Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. So if you're doing this, this is like a very common kind of activity. And of course, I mean, any kind of internal site that you're going to install, like Drupal or WordPress or whatever, they're going to require a MySQL install, or they're going to want something similar, like a Postgres or something like that, or MariaDB if you want to stay away from MySQL. So whatever you can get a hold of, database server, that's a pretty simple install. You would, again, just remember to start the service, which I typically, in real life, I remember to do it. I just keep forgetting to mention it on the show. But you do the /etc/rcd, or initd, rather, on Debian, init.d/mysqld start, or on Red Hat, it would be service mysqld start, whatever. So what that gives you is a running, idling MySQL server that you can then do cool stuff with, like MySQL admin, create some users or a user, and then create a database table, and then marry that database table to your Drupal install or your WordPress install or your Coppermine photo gallery install. You know, whatever you're doing with that server, that little local install, you can you'll have MySQL running on localhost. So if you ever configured one of these through a web host company, they usually have their MySQL servers running on some other box, you know, somewhere else in their data center or whatever. And so you're usually putting in on your Drupal configuration, when you're going through that, you're putting in some random string of numbers and letters, and then it's, you know, at some other server, and then there's your username and your password and the database name and the database user and the database password, all that other stuff. Same deal here, except that it's not going to be some weird database on some other server. It's going to be the database running on that very server, so it's localhost. It's really nice. It's very simple to set up, and don't forget your MySQL password. Obviously, there are lots of other kinds of servers that you can set up at this point. I mean, right now, what you have got is a server that is the center of your local network. So you can do all kinds of cool stuff. You can either install more stuff onto that box if it's nice and powerful and you feel really confident about performance, or you can set up another box next to it and put, you know, like a Jabber D server on that, and an MPD server, and you can just run all kinds of cool services on these things, point at it from your DNS records and assign it a static IP address with DHCP, and suddenly you've got people chatting on your own internal, fully encrypted Jabber service while writing wiki entries on your internal wiki, while listening to music via your MPD server, and it's just really cool. It's amazing stuff. So if you haven't done this before, and if you haven't been following along frantically with all of these episodes, you should do that. You should set one up if you can possibly swing that. I mean, I know it requires really to work the way that I'm describing it. It does require hardware with, you know, multiple network cards and a switch and all these other things, but you know, it's kind of worth it if you can get a hold of all that stuff. And even if you can't, you might as well try it with, you know, either two laptops to whatever degree you can, or you could try it with a laptop, you know, with one network card being the Ethernet cable and the one that distributes all the information, your wireless card, or you could try it with virtual machines as well. I've never tried it with virtual machines, so I can't really advise you on that. What I can advise you on is the role of routers in this whole setup that you've got. So I don't know about you, I don't have switches lying around. Well, now I actually do, I lied, but back before I got a job where there were switches involved, I didn't have switches just lying around. I had like a little router from Best Buy or whatever, and it wasn't actually from Best Buy, but you get the idea. It was like one of those little cheap plastic routers, and that's kind of what I used, and that was that. And that little router actually was the gateway server, and it was the DHCP server. I think some of the fancier routers kind of have a little tiny DNS server in there. I don't really remember. I remember doing a lot of Etsy host stuff, so maybe the routers didn't. But I bet you can find some with that feature. But the thing about the router now is that it might be handy, but you want to turn off a lot of those features, because if you think about what it wants to do all the things that you've just set up. So if you set up a gateway and you set up DHCP, and all that stuff, NAT, you know, network address translation, the whole nine yards, you've got running now on your computer. You don't need the little plastic router that you got from eBay to try to manage all of that for you. You actually don't want it to do that, because then you're going to have all kinds of interesting network problems that, you know, everything thinks something else is a different server, or it's going through one router only to get to another router, essentially, so it's a lot of wasted traffic there. So make sure that if you're using a router, kind of dumb it down so that it's more like just a switch, more or less. Or basically a true router that you know, it doesn't actually serve DHCP. It's a feature that it does that. It really is. Like, when you need your router to just work and magically propagate all these IP addresses for you, stuff like that, it's a feature. But in this case, since we've kind of overridden that, it would become a little bit of a bother. So I hope that this these three episodes in the Networking Basics series have been informative. I will have more, I'm sure, at a later date, but this is about as much as I've got for you right now. So I hope you enjoy them, and I hope that you have fun playing around with servers, and good luck with it.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.